We ended off last week with, we're still in the middle of the commentary of the Abarbanel on this second Mishnah. And that which it says, Al Shlosha Dvorim Ha'olam Kayam, Ha'olam Omed, the world stands on three things. Al HaTorah, Al HaAvodah, V'Al Gemilus Chasodim. So he explained that the world is divided into three dimensions. There are the totally spiritual aspect of the world, of the universe, angels and so on. And then there are the semi-spiritual physical beings, which are the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, the stars, and so on, which form the mazalos, the signs of the zodiac, astrology. And then there are the physical, this physical world, and corresponding to that is Torah, Avodah, and Gemilus Chasodim. Torah represents the more spiritual aspect of the universe, the angels and so on. Avoda is a combination, sacrifices, which have in them both the physical and spiritual side. And Gemilus Chasodim is kindnesses, which is in this physical world. And I said that we would discuss a little bit the idea of Mazalos, this idea of the second intermediate part of the world, which is a combination of the spiritual and the physical, which are the heavenly bodies, which through which God's influence comes in this world. Those are the mazalos. Now, the way that it works, the word mazal does not mean luck. The word mazal means to distill. Tizal katalim rasi, my words should be distilled like the dew. The Ribbono Shel Olam distills his influence in the world through these bodies, meaning the following, that God created an orderly system in how this world functions, like a well-oiled machine. And God is constantly broadcasting influence and good to come into the world. And that good sometimes takes on the guise of things that we see as good and sweet, and sometimes the good has to come in bitter ways also. There has to be anger in the world because that has to take care of things that are necessary where there's anger and so on. So there are all kinds of influences that emanate from God. But he made them come into the world in a very organized way, at certain times, in certain places, through certain things. And if everything functions according to the plan, then at certain times there are influences for certain things, and certain times influences for other things, which we'll explain in a few minutes a little bit more in detail. However, that only applies basically to the nations of the world. They are under these influences totally. And if you're born under a certain mazel and with a certain influence, you have a certain character. We'll see that it's not it's not set to a point where you have no free choice. There's still an idea of free choice, but still your free choice is within a certain structure, within certain parameters. The Jewish people ain't mazel Yisrael. That means that even though under normal circumstances we are also affected by these influences, but we can go beyond them. We can have a direct relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change that mazel if he chooses. You know, in a second I'll give you an example to all of this. That's a general idea. Let me make it more a little bit more specific and then explain a little bit better. The Gemara says, I'm going to read you this Gemara, but you shouldn't get carried away with it because this is not the only factors that make a difference. But the Gemara says there are different influences that come into the world and different days of the week. Sunday has its influence, Monday its influence, and so on. Somebody's born on Sunday is going to be influenced by the influence of Sunday at his birth or her birth, and have certain characteristics. Now, they can use those characteristics for the good or for the bad or indifferently. They can choose to suppress them. That doesn't control their life. It just means that they have certain character traits, certain predispositions that exist. Again, that does not mean that necessarily they're going to be one specific way, good, bad, or indifferent. They can use these influences in all different ways. That's up to their free choice. But the influence is there, just like people are born, that we understand, with different characters, which may be determined by their DNA and by their heredity and by a million other factors. One of the factors that determines what character, what influences, what kind of personality, what kind of things will affect that person is the hour, minute, place where they're born. And part of that is influenced by the spiritual influences that God makes come through the heavenly bodies, and which heavenly bodies at the time are in control or are predominant and intense, that's the influence that comes into the world. Right? If the planet Mars is the one that is showering its influence over the world, then a person has certain character traits. If it's the moon, different character traits, and so on. The Gemara says like this in Shabbos, in the end of the Gemara of Shabbos, the Gemara says like this. Find it. Hai man debechad b'shaba. Person born on Sunday. Yehe gvar velo chadobe. He'll be a person who is singularly either good or bad. He'll be polarized. The Gemara says either completely good, completely bad. He'll be a person who goes to extremes, not somewhere in the middle. Hai man de betray b'shava, person born on Monday. Yehegava ragzon. He'll be an agitated person. He's not going to be a calm person, but agitated. Because that's the day that the waters were separated. One born on Tuesday, Yehegava atir vizanai. Be a very sensual person. Person born on Wednesday will have a certain amount of wisdom. And have an enlightened person, because that's the day that the luminaries were put into practice, into effect. Person born on Thursday will be a person who will be by nature a kind person who does gemilus chasadim. Person on Friday will be a person who is very active in chasing after mitzvahs. And a person born on Shabbos, it says, will end up dying on Shabbos, since they had to desecrate Shabbos for him, so he's going to leave Shabbos. But also, he's going to be a holy person. Okay, now, again, don't start just thinking when you were born and this is what you are, because the Gemara ends and says that it depends on a lot more than just the day you were born, the hour you were born, the place you were born, and so on. And there's other factors too, besides the mazel that you were born under. We say people mazel tov, right? We don't mean that whatever the mazel was should be good, because whatever it is. But it means you should use it for the good. You should take those influences in your life, and everybody has influences from many sources. But you can use it for the good or you can use it for the bad. It's up to you how you channel it. For instance, the Gemara says, if somebody born under the influence of the planet Mars is going to have the personality or the predisposition to shed blood. Now that sounds pretty wild. That means he could be a murderer? No. He could be a shochet, he could be a moel, he could be a doctor, or he could be a murderer. So all of them have the same personality per se, same predisposition towards shedding blood. Some do it for a mitzvah, some for something parav, and some for something negative. So it's up to you how you use it, but the predisposition is there. So that is the world of mazolos. Now, that is what astrology is based on, and many rishonim say that astrology is a real science, a true science. And that is that somebody can know, looking at a chart of when you were born, under what influences, heavenly influences you were born, as to what your personality is. It also has to take in consideration a lot of other things, not the only influences. Your parents, your upbringing, your genetic heredity, all of that also plays a part. So it's not just this. Also, since God sends his influence into the world through these heavenly bodies, then if you know how the heavenly bodies are set up and which ones are ascending and which ones are descending and which ones are in control at that time, you can know basically what kind of powers are coming into the world. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be used one way or the other, but the potential is there for those powers to be used either for the good or the bad. So you can tell a little bit about what the future is going to be. Now there's two points. First of all, let me explain with an example how that works. If let's say there's a machine, we used this example for something else quite a few weeks ago, but it fits for this also. You have this gigantic machine. They have these vending machines that if you push this button, the green button, you get potato chips, and you push the red button, you get pretzels. Okay, you put your money in, and you press the right button, and you get what you press the button for. Let's make this machine a few miles long. There's a button on one side, and that sets into motion a tremendous amount of gears that set other gears into motion and other gears. And if you push the red button, you set the gears into motion that eventually will push a bag of potato chips out the other side of the machine, maybe a week later. If you push the green button, you set gears into motion that will push a bag of pretzels outside the machine a week later. Now, if you push the red button and you see the gears in motion, you know that in about a week, potato chips are going to come down out the other side. If you see somebody push the green button and you see those gears in motion, then you know that pretzels are going to come out the other side. So too, God sends his influence to accomplish things in this world through the heavenly bodies. If you see those bodies in motion at any specific time, you know that eventually, soon, or within a short amount of time, certain influences are going to be coming in the world. So you can predict what kind of influences are coming. And again, it's very complicated, which we'll get to. So that's how astrologers can tell you about yourself, about your personality, whatever. When all these things were really known. However, if you have the person who made the machine, the technician, even if you push the red button and the gears to push out potato chips is set into motion, the technician can go, stop the machine, reroute it, change it, redo the gears, and you can get pretzels even though the gears for potato chips are in motion. God is the technician. If he so chooses, he can change the gears in mid-motion. He can change them completely. He can stop them. He can reroute them. So when it comes to the Jewish people, all of this is irrelevant to a certain degree, because whatever influences were set into motion can be changed, and the way to change them is to get the technician to get involved, and we have a way to get the technician to get involved. We have his number through davening, through learning Torah, through doing mitzvahs. So we are above the mazel. If we don't do anything special, we're affected by it also. But if we do something special, then we can go above it and reroute it or whatever through the technician who's God. However, that does not mean that the astrology that exists today is true. Because basically the astrology that exists today is just a vestige. Most astrologers, I can't speak for everybody, but the wisdom of astrology has to a certain degree been lost. And what it really is and what's really behind it is no longer known. People think they know it. But it can be compared to the following. If you don't know the background and the inner workings of things, you can see all of the externals and it's not the same thing. Examples the following. Imagine somebody from a backward country, primitive country, that still makes light, we're making fire and candles or whatever, and he comes to a modern country and he sees that they have a switch on the wall, they flick it up, and all of a sudden the lights in the middle of the ceiling go on, they don't burn up the whole house, and you can make light without fire and just by pushing a switch on the wall. So he's an enterprising, primitive person, and he buys a lot of switch plates and switches and light bulbs, goes back to his primitive country, and he says, I want to show you a miracle, and I'm going to sell you these things for a nice price, but everybody's going to be able to make fire in their ceiling without it burning anything and having light. So he screws a light bulb into the ceiling, nails the switch plate and switch onto his wall, and he gets the whole city together, and he flicks the switch, and nothing happens. He says, they probably thought, I'm so primitive, I don't know what's doing, and they sold me defective materials. So he goes back to the country that he bought it, and he says, you may think I'm primitive, but you cheated me. And you sold me defective light bulbs or switches. One of them doesn't work because I flipped the switch and the light didn't go on. The guy said, well, did you check your wiring? He said, what wiring? He said, did you check the fuses? What fuses? He said, I have a switch and I have a light and I saw it works here. Right? How come it doesn't work by me? He said, the lights are fine, the switch is fine. But there's a lot behind the scenes that you don't see. There's a lot of wiring. The wiring is hooked up to the electric company, and there's fuses. There's a million other things that you can't see besides a switch and a light bulb. A switch and a light bulb aren't going to make light. So the people today are on the level where they see the switch and they see the light bulb, but all the things behind the scenes that go into astrology or a host of other things, they're not familiar with. And even though they think they know all the details of how to make a chart or whatever, there may be a lot of things that used to be understood that are part of all of this that have been lost. And without it, it's like having the switch and the bulb and it's meaningless. So therefore, what is today, even the astrologers who are very, very deeply into this, we're not talking about the horoscope in the newspaper. That's absurd, right? That, first of all, just applies to 12 months of the year. There are millions of people who were born on the same day of any specific month, and to think that what it says in the newspaper for that day applies to all million people equally is absurd, right? So even the people who claim to know right, today, right, know a lot more than just something that applies to everybody who's born on that day. There's many, many other factors than just the day you were born. It's the hour you were born, where you were born, and therefore it applies very individually to people and not generally to anybody born in that place at that time or whatever, on that day. It is much more complicated, but even the ones who know the complicated details are probably missing a lot of points that have been lost through the ages, and therefore they only know the externals. They may know that there's wires or whatever, but they don't know how that wiring really should be, and things that exist besides the wiring and how it's hooked up to the electric company. And you can know a lot of details about electricity, but if you're missing some points, it's not going to work. So basically today, I would say that there are no people who know what real astrology is, that Chochmah has been lost. There are Rishonim who hold that there's nothing to astrology, that it's a false thing. The Rambam holds like that. But the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra hold that it is a true science and knowledge, and but there's a lot of details to it that perhaps have been lost. Okay, again, the horoscope in the newspaper is not what we're talking about. It's absurd, right? The horoscope in the newspaper is so vague and so open-ended that whatever you read there, in the end you say, hey, it's not far off, it's true, right? But you can read all of them, and all of them will have a shaychus, because all of them are written in such a way that they have meaning to everybody in every possible situation. You can look in and see something in your day that has a connection to that thing. It's so nebulous. If you read it, it's like it says you're going to stub your toe today unless you don't. And then you're amazed that it came true, right? So that's absurd. That's not what we're talking about. There is according to many Rishonim, a real science called astrology. And there is something to it. Whether there are people today or not who are aware of all the details to make it really effective and really true, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about astrologers to know if there are people who know or don't. But I would imagine most of the knowledge has been lost. The deeper details of it. And without those deeper details, it's meaningless. Now, are you allowed to go to an astrologer?
In Mitzrayim.
What?
In Mitzrayim, when they saw that a baby boy would be born with the leader,
right.
That's why they drowned the baby boy.
Right. From Chazal, it seems like there was something to this. Plenty of Midrashim or whatever. That there is something to it. Now, the Rambam still holds that it all was just psychology and made up or whatever, and superstition.
Are you allowed?
Are you allowed? That's it. So the Torah says, "Tomim ti yam Hashem Elokecha." You shouldn't look to see the future and find all different ways of knowing what's going to be or whatever. You should have faith in the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Tomim tiyam Hashem Elokecha. And therefore the Gemara says that you're not allowed to actively seek out the advice of astrologers. But if you're made known, if you find out that, just like this, somebody tells you, you're allowed to take it into consideration and be careful based on what's told to you. That much, yes. So it says that Rabbi Akiva was told by an astrologer that his daughter would die on her wedding day. And he always kept it in mind or whatever. And then he found that she had taken a hairpin and put it through something to guard it. And there was a snake that she killed with the hairpin. And he asked her, what happened? Obviously a miracle over here that you killed the snake unwittingly, and it's a poisonous snake. The snake was supposed to kill you. she said that a poor person came to the door, and she took this hairpin out of her hair for a second, as our wedding day, to give him tzedakah, and she put the hairpin, stuck it somewhere so she wouldn't lose it, and that's where she killed the snake. She really was supposed to die on her wedding and be bitten by the snake, but the mitzvah that she did of tzedakah saved her life. So there was something to it, but again, we can circumvent it. We have the technician who can change the influence if the right merit exists. Okay.
I have a problem with that. Like you said before, that if we do our prayers, it influences Hashem. Just like this. If Hashem says she's supposed to die, if that was true, then why he changes his mind and let her live?
Okay.
By doing that. That's what I'm
saying. Okay. Prayer does not change God's mind. Prayer changes the condition. By praying, you set up a new set of conditions. And according to the old conditions, this should have been. But according to the new conditions, something different should be. Good example. And we always give the same example. Person's sick in the hospital. Okay? And the doctor says they need a serious, painful operation. But their body is weak, and that's why they can't integrate medicine. So they have to have the operation. If their body would be a little bit stronger, then in place of the operation, there could be bitter medicine that would do the same thing. But the body's not strong enough to integrate it. If the person exercises, he changes the situation. He's no longer have a weak body, he has a stronger body. Stronger body can take the medicine, doesn't need the operation. The doctor didn't change his mind. He didn't influence the doctor not to give you the operation. What changed was the condition. The doctor was consistent. Condition A, you get an operation. Condition B, all you need is medicine. What changed was the patient's condition from condition A to condition B, changed from operation to medicine. Same thing. Before a person davens, he may need a certain influence, that God may have to deal with him in a certain way for his good, for his eternal good. He may need to be sick. But if he davens, he changes his condition. And now, in the new condition, he doesn't need to be sick anymore for his eternal good. That eternal good can come in a different way.
What's the difference between changing the condition and changing Hashem's?
Because when, if you change God's mind, that means that God changed his mind. That he didn't, in the beginning he thought one way, now he thought the way, which is ridiculous. But if you change the condition, the doctor didn't change his mind. When the doctor came and examined this patient, he knew that under condition A, he's going to give the person an operation, condition B is to give the medicine. Doctor didn't change his mind. What changed? The person changed his condition. Same thing. God doesn't change his mind. God knows that under this circumstance, this is what I need to do for you. Under this circumstance, different. You have the ability to change the circumstance through your free choice. Okay. Okay, so that is a little bit of understanding of what the three dimensions of the world were. Okay. Then there is... Okay. Now there's another, the Abarbanel says another idea. He says the Anshe Knesset HaGdola, right, way in the beginning of their reign in Klal Yisrael, they said three things. They should be patient when you judge, that you should have a lot of students, and that you should make a fence around the Torah. So, when Shimon HaTzadik came and he concluded that period of history of the Anshe Knesset HaGdola, right? So he said that he added and enhanced what they said. He said it's not good enough just to learn Torah patiently or whatever, to be patient in judgment, but a person should be learning Torah all the time. It's not enough just to do it sometimes patiently, but it should be an ongoing thing. So he said the world stands on Torah. And then he said what they said, what's it called? That you should make a fence around the Torah. That means that you should be very careful with the negative things. The fences are that you shouldn't transgress the negative things. He came along and he said you should also emphasize the positive things. There's avoda. There's service to God. There's not just not doing things wrong. There's also positive things. Right? The Anshik Nes Agdullah took it for granted. He came and enhanced it and let people know, don't take their words in their most narrow sense, but you have to be able to enhance them and elaborate on them too. And the last thing was, have a lot of students, right, teach a lot of people Torah, but also do other Gemilas Chasadim and help people in many ways. That also, don't only have a lot of students, but do a lot of kindnesses, all different kinds of kindnesses to other people also. So he came and enhanced the three things that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola said, that you should, what's it called, be deliberate when you judge. You should constantly be learning. So if you don't learn constantly, you're not going to know what to be deliberate in judging. You should make a fence around the Torah, but you should also be osik and avod in serving God, not just being careful not to do things wrong. And you should not only have a lot of students, but you should do chesed and kindness to all people, not just your students, and this way you'll have a lot of people that you affect in this world. Just like you affect your students, you can affect other people by doing kindnesses for them. Okay. That pretty much is what the Abarbanel says. Okay. Now we're going to mention some other commentaries. Let's mention some tongue-in-cheek commentaries first, some lighter things. What did Shimon HaTzadik say? Our shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed. The world stands on three things. I saw three humorous, tongue-in-cheek pshatim, which have very, very serious implications, though. One is, the world progresses in everything. It's constantly on the move, progressing, except for three things. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed. The world stands still when it comes to these three things. Torah, avoda, and gemilus chasadim. People are making progress in every area of life, right? Comfort and entertainment and technology and media, but when it comes to Torah, avoda, and gemilus chasadim, there the world stands still. Right? Doesn't progress too much in all those three areas. Right? That's one pshat I saw.
But yet we read there's more learning going on in our generation than even in Europe where I was born.
Yeah, 100%. But comparative to what it could be and comparative to what the rest of the world is doing with their other things, it's meager. Second thing I saw, Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed means the world is anxiously awaiting for three things, but hasn't come yet. Torah, avodah, and gemilas chasadim. People are anxiously awaiting, when will I have Torah? When will I be able to, right? But they're constantly waiting and anticipating, don't do anything about it. Similar idea, just a little bit twist. And a third thing is, al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed, you can get people's attention and have them sit through anything. Except if you start talking about Torah, avodah, gemilas chasadim, they get up to leave. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed. You want to get people up and going, right? Leaving for three things, they get up and leave. For everything else, they'll sit and listen or whatever. But once you start talking about Torah, avodah, and gemilas chasadim, people have other things to do and they find excuses to get up and go. There is a very, very serious implication to all of this. The major idea of all of these things is that people, when it comes to Torah, avodah, and gemilas chasadim, try to seek status quo. They're not interested in improving. in progressing. Whatever I have is enough. Let's not be, you know, chazerim and want too much Torah, too much avoda, too much gemilas chasadim. Do it with what's it called?
Moderation.
Moderation. That's what I'm looking for. Moderation. When it comes to other things, they're not interested in moderation. There, they want the most. When it comes to these spiritual things, many people, if not all, not most people, are very happy with the status quo that they have. Now, this week's Sedra tells me how terrible that is and how much a Jew who doesn't want to progress in these areas, how much he suffers because of it. And I've said this here many times, and I'm going to say it again for those people who haven't heard it and even the people who have heard it. I've said this idea thousands of times all over the world. Literally. And I haven't found an audience yet that can't relate to it. And that's the following. It says in Rashi, in the beginning of this week's Sedra, Im bechukosai teilechu, sheyiyu ameilim batorah. You should put effort into Torah. Torah can't come just easy. Something you just do easily. It's something that needs effort. Now, on the surface, where do you see in those words, in bechukosai teilechu, that it means effort? If it meant effort, it should say bechukosai torutsu, run. That's effort. Walking doesn't seem to be effort. So why in bechukosai teilechu is effort? One question. Secondly, it says, and what if you don't put effort into Torah? Himlosishmuli, ubechukosai timasu. You'll be disgusted with the and you won't put effort into it. Then Rashi says you will fall down 7 levels, and the last one being that you will deny God. Kofar be'ikr. The 7 levels are, we're going to go through them in great detail. The rest of the class we're going to spend on this. The 7 levels are, you won't learn, you won't do the mitzvahs properly, you'll be disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs. You will hate the chachamim, the sages. You will try to stop people from keeping mitzvahs. You'll deny the validity of the mitzvahs. And lastly, you will deny God. I'm going to go through them again. So it doesn't seem really realistic. Just because a person doesn't put effort into Torah, he's going to go down these 7 levels and be a kofar be'ikr? There's plenty of people who are nice, from people who don't put effort into Torah, and they're not deniers of God. They're nice, from Shomer Shabbos people. What are you going to tell me? Wait. Eventually, they're going to go off the derech and deny God. I know people have been like that for generations. So it hasn't happened yet. What are you going to tell me? No, really, deep down, they don't believe. I can't accept that either. I see they're nice people. Nice, believing people who keep Torah mitzvahs. What does it mean? And what's this effort? So one way of understanding putting effort into Torah applies to men learning Torah. You know, somebody putting his feet in ice water and learning 22 hours straight. That's effort in Torah. But that's not the only effort. There's even a more difficult effort in Torah. The effort in Torah that's represented by chukosai teilechu is constant movement. Unlike what we said, our shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed, the word moves and progresses on everything but Torah, avodah, gemilas. There it stands still. Human beings were meant to constantly move, progress. This is a world of movement. You can't stand still. Either you're progressing or you're regressing. You can't stand still. Nothing in this world is at rest. Nothing. Right? The world, the earth, is turning 1,000 miles an hour on its axis. It's going around the sun. The whole solar system is moving in space. Everything is moving at tremendous speed. And even within things, right, this table, the molecules, the atoms in the table are moving at the speed of light. And if they go slower and slower, the thing contracts. And theoretically speaking, if you contract something enough, it disappears. If it stops movement completely, all the atoms and molecules stop moving, the thing contraction to nothingness. So you can't have no motion in this world. This is a world of motion. The pasuk says, "The nasati l'chol mahalchim bein ha'omdim ha'elu." Angels are called people creations that stand in one place. Animals are created; they don't progress, they don't change. A shore, when it's born, is called a shore. When it dies, it's called a shore. It doesn't change. Angels don't change. They're created. They stay the same way all the time. But human beings, Adam in gematria is ma. What? Animal is behema. Bo ma. Whatever it is, it is. It doesn't change, says the Maharal. But Adam is ma. You have to always ask, where is, what is? Because it's always changing. So either you're changing for the good or you're changing for the bad. You can't stand still. Somebody once told me this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to run up. Children do it all the time. Adults would like to do it, but they hold themselves back. If you're running up a down escalator and you stop, what happens? You go down. If you put in a little effort, you stand still. If you put in more effort, you get a little higher. You can't stand still in this world and be standing still. You're going down. Only with effort can you progress. That's what it says. In bechukosai teilechu, you have to constantly be walking. You don't have to run necessarily, but you have to constantly be progressing, little by little. But if you're never improving, and you're always standing still, and always looking for the status quo when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs, you're ending up to go down, and you're going to go down to the bargain basement. Because, I'll explain to you in 1 second why psychologically it has to be like that. The way I understand this Rashi, of these 7 levels that you're going to go down if you don't put effort into Torah, is the following. People have to want to improve their level of Torah, their mitzvahs, their Shabbos, their davening, on a constant level. Again, slowly but surely, walking, but constantly improving. If you decide that you don't want to improve, you just want to settle on status quo, you're going to have to go down these 7 levels. Let me explain to you why. On the one hand, a person doesn't want to improve and progress because it's uncomfortable. You like to feel comfortable. And finding a comfortable niche and not having to improve and change is a very comfortable thing. So on the one hand, a person has a desire to be comfortable and he doesn't want to improve, doesn't want to progress, just wants to do what he did yesterday and the day before and finish. Once you start changing, change is very uncomfortable. On the other hand, if you believe in the Torah, and you know that really you should be improving and progressing, you feel guilty if you don't. That's not comfortable at all. Feeling guilty, guilt feelings are very uncomfortable. So now we have a dilemma. On the one hand, you don't want to improve, but you don't want to feel guilty about it. So how is it possible for a person to resist change and progress and improvement in his Torah life and still not to feel guilty about it? Those are the 7 things that Rashi talks about. The Satan created 7 defense mechanisms that enable you to not change and improve and not feel guilty about it. And now let me explain how that works in great detail. I'm going to use the following example, which I always use. When I was a rabbi in Miami, I first became a rabbi there. So I had many elderly Jews who never had the opportunity to really learn in a yeshiva or learn in a day school even. Either they were Holocaust survivors whose youth was spent basically not as youth, but they grew up very fast because of the tsaris of the Holocaust. Or they were Americans who were born in America and raised in America at a time where there were no yeshivas. There was no education. They went to afternoon schools. At best, they're frum because their parents were frum, but they didn't know too much details about the laws of Shabbos. So I saw, here's people who are Shomer Shabbos. They don't drive and they don't turn on electricity, to find Shomer Shabbos people, but they never had the opportunity to really learn the details of Shabbos. So I decided these people usually are the ones who come Minchan Maariv time, the elderly people. So I decided I have to give a shiur between Minchan Maariv, just to time wise, till it gets late enough to say Maariv, which is usually about 15, 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. So I was going to learn with these people the laws of Shabbos, details of laws of Shabbos, which they never learned. And we did that. This was like the first 6 months that I was in Miami. We started this, and we were progressing very nicely, and people were learning things they never heard of before. We were up to the laws of Borer, selecting on Shabbos, which are very, you'll excuse the pun, nitpicking laws. Okay? Taking the good from the bad, or the bad from the good, with a utensil, without a utensil, for immediate use, not for very, very detailed laws. And we were in the middle of discussing the details of these laws, and one of my balabatim, who didn't usually come to Minchan Maariv on a regular basis, but he had yahrzeit that day. He was a doctor in his 30s and a learned person, but more, I would say at that time, a more modern Orthodox person, okay? Or as they call it in here in Eretz Yisrael, Dati Light, right? So he was, he came in, and he didn't plan to come for this shiur. He planned to come for Maariv because he had a yahrzeit that night. But he miscalculated and came early. So he walked into the shiur, because when the shiur was given in the shul, and you walked into the shul, there was no vestibule. When you walked in, you were in the shul. So he was in the shiur. He was too polite to walk out and come back in 10 minutes. He sat down. And I see his eyes bulging as we go through these details of these laws. He comes over to me after the shiur, and he says, "Rabbi, are there really people who do all of this?" Now, I was 6 months out of the kolo. I didn't think there were people who didn't do all of this. So we were both a little surprised. Let's use this person as the example. Here's a person who's from Shomer Shabbos, but you know, don't confuse me with the details. I kept Shabbos last week. I didn't know about this Borer thing. Next week, I don't want to know about it. I'm not interested in changing and improving. Just let me keep Shabbos the way I did last year, the way my parents did. They didn't know anything about Borer either. And don't confuse me with these details. So this person wants to be comfortable, but doesn't want to be guilty either. So therefore, he has to have the following things affect him. First thing Rashi says is, if you don't want to improve and don't want to put effort into Torah in improving, you're going to have to not learn. That doesn't mean you can't learn anything. You could learn Medrash and Kabbalah and whatever. Just don't learn anything that smells from the laws of Shabbos, because you may find out a little bit about this Borer thing and then you'll feel guilty. Because the less you know about it, ignorance is bliss. You can convince yourself that Borer has nothing to do with you. Borer is probably in factories, farms. What in the world does that do in my kitchen? There can't be anything that I could possibly do that would be wrong about selecting. Selecting is for farmers, for factory workers, not in my personal kitchen. So if you don't learn, you can feel not guilty about not improving and learning about Borer, because the less I know about it, the more I can fool myself and think that doesn't apply to me. So that's the first level down. Don't learn. If you don't learn, you automatically go to the second level. You don't do. If you don't know, you end up doing things wrong. So, one day I'm passing by this novelty shop, and I see they have this contraption that you put fish with bones in it, pull the lever, and it extracts the bones from the fish. I say, wow, I hate eating gefilte fish. I love eating fish with bones. It's such a pain, though, to take those bones out of the fish. I'm going to buy this contraption. I'm going to silver plate it and inscribe on it L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. And every Shabbos, I'm going to put the fish. My wife's going to bring all the fish to the table. We're going to put it in. I'm going to pull the lever and say L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. And all the bones for the whole Shabbos are going to be taken out. Now, that is a Torah prohibition. It's with a utensil, not for immediate use, and you're taking the bad from the good. Everything that could be wrong is wrong. But I don't know, I never learned about it. I can't imagine this is, the Torah would prohibit this. This is Mamish Kovet Shabbos. So every week I Mechal Shabbos L'Kovet Shabbos Kodesh, not knowing that there's something wrong with this. So I'm on to the second level already. I didn't learn, I don't do. Everything is fine, no problem, don't feel guilty, don't want to improve. Until one Friday night, my neighbor invites me to spend Shabbos Friday night with him. And I see his wife also serves fish with bones. I say, too bad I didn't bring my bone plucker with me. We make things easier here. And all of a sudden I see my friend picking up his fork, putting it down, studying the fish, looking from this angle, that angle, I begin to feel guilty because I realize there's something to do with Shabbos and this fish. That's why he's not eating it. That's why he's looking to see, should he take the bones from the fish or the fish from the bones? Should he take it with the fork, without the fork? He's already contemplating how to eat this fish properly, and I don't think there's any problem. Just eat the fish, take out the bones and finish. But he's making me feel guilty because he is trying to do something that I'm not interested in knowing about or doing. So now I have to go down to level number 3. That's called Moesh Ba'acherim Ha'osim. I am disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. So I look at my friend and I say to myself, this isn't normal. This guy's off the wall. This is not normal. Normal people eat their fish. They don't study it. This guy is a fanatic. He's a chnyok. He's off the wall. This is fanaticism. This is not normal. This is not Torah. Right? Torah is normal. This guy's not normal. So now I don't feel guilty anymore. Because what he's doing is fanaticism. What he's doing is not normal. And I want to be normal, so I don't feel guilty of not being normal. This is not a normal thing to do. So I'm disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs that I don't want to keep. I make them into monsters, and then I don't feel guilty. Okay. I go to sleep that night, right, get a good night's sleep, wake up in the morning, make a bracha shelo asani chnyok. Right, I'm very happy, I'm not a fanatic. I go to shul, and the rabbi gets up to speak, and he says, you know, I've noticed a lot of people in this shul that are nice Shomer Shabbos people, but they don't know the first things about the laws of Shabbos. For instance, Borer. Oh, no. Now I got to listen to this rabbi talk about, I don't want to know about Borer. The less I know, the less guilty I feel. I don't want to know. And now the rabbi's going to talk about Borer? So I have to tune him out somehow. And I can't say, well, the rabbi's off the wall. He's a fanatic because he's my rabbi. My conscience won't bother that. All of this is subconscious. So now I have to go down to level number 4. That's called hating the sages. I look at the rabbi, and I know what's coming. He's going to start talking about Borer, and I'm going to feel guilty. So I look at the rabbi, and I say, it's not that I don't want to listen to Torah. I love Torah. Any Torah, but not from that mouth. That rabbi is not a mensch. Why? 20 years ago, he passed my grandmother in the street, and he didn't say good morning. He's an animal. Like that person I wouldn't listen to the Gettysburg Address or the Ten Commandments from. Not because I don't want to learn Torah, but not from that mouth. Now what if you didn't have a grandmother, or the rabbi did say good morning to her? Then there's other things. That rabbi is in it for the money. Look at the car he drives. Or that rabbi's a schlepper. Look at the car he drives. There's always something that you can impugn the person, even if you can't impugn what he is saying. And therefore you go down to the 4th level. Right? If you make me feel guilty, I don't like you. And therefore, I impugn you so I don't have to listen to you. So you can't make me feel guilty. I once had a Bala boss that didn't like me, which is not unusual. A lot of people don't like me, but I know, usually know why. What did I do? Sometimes I was right, sometimes I was wrong. That's one of the hazards of being a rabbi. In any case, this guy really didn't like me. And I don't remember ever doing anything to him, not good or bad, that he shouldn't like me. And I was intimidated to ask him and confront him because he was older than me. It was my early years. And he was a lawyer and I was, you know, just a young rabbi. I couldn't confront him until 20 minutes before Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur, we had a break. And I said, I can't go into Ne'ilah. Maybe I really did something terrible. I mean, the way he didn't like me, right, I thought maybe I killed his mother and forgot about it, right? And that's why he doesn't like me. But he didn't like his mother either, so it didn't make a difference. So I called him over to the side privately, and I said, look, I get the feeling that you don't like me in a big way. But I don't remember what exactly I did to deserve that. So if you'll remind me what I did, I'd be happy to ask you mechila, and we could go into ne'ila friends. He looks at me straight in the eye, he says, Rabbi, I hate your guts. I said, okay, you got it out of your system. Why? He said, because when you finish your drushes, I feel guilty. So I thought to myself, I guess I'm doing my job, but I didn't say that to him. In any case, I told him, look, don't stay in for the drusha, find some excuse to go out, go to the bathroom, whatever, don't make it obvious. If that's what the drushes make you feel guilty, it's not the intention. So avoid it. So we became friends till Sukkot, and then something else happened, and that was the end of that. In any case, so people make you feel guilty, you don't like them because you don't want to feel guilty. So that's the next level down. Hate authority. Hate the rabbis. Okay, now, and not everybody is like me. So after the rabbi speaks, one of my friends comes over to me. He says, you know what? The rabbi said that we don't know the laws of Borer or whatever, and he's willing to teach us in a shiur every Tuesday night the laws of Shabbos. Want to join? No, it's the last thing in the world I want to do is join. Right? I don't want to feel guilty. But I can't tell my friends, oh, you're a bunch of fanatics or whatever. They're my friends. So I have to go down now to level number five. Level number five is trying to stop people from keeping mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the mitzvahs I don't want to do. I tell my friends, oh, you want to become more religious? You want to start learning about Borer and all the intricacies of Shabbos? Kol hakavod. But let me warn you that it is a step in a very dangerous direction. Because it doesn't end with Borer. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Once you start becoming more frum, you're going to go over the deep end. Right? You're going to become fanatics. Right? It starts with Borer. I give you 2 weeks, you'll be taking a shower with a black hat on. Right? 2 more weeks, your wife will be wearing her tichel down past her nose. It's going to be pikuach nefesh. She won't be able to breathe. You're headed for fanaticism. So don't take a step in the wrong direction. It's a slippery slope. So I try to convince them, you know, be sane. This is, you're really going off the deep end. So some of them may listen to me and some not. So the ones that don't listen to me say, you know, we just want to do what's right. We're not going off the deep end. We're not going to become fanatics. So do you want to join us or not? Now I have to go down to level number six. Level number six is denying the validity of the mitzvah. That sounds really harsh. It's not. What I say is the following. Do you think if Borer was a halacha that I wouldn't be the first one to join the class and learn the laws of Borer? Of course I would. But you should know Borer's only a minig. We didn't have that minig in our family. Borer is only one opinion. I don't know who the other opinion is, but there's always another opinion. Whoever it is, I'm for him. We didn't hold that opinion. We hold a different opinion. Borer is only a chumrah. It's only a strict stringency. We didn't have that chumrah in our family. We were maker. So I've reduced the mitzvah to a chumrah, to one opinion, or to a minig. Right? Minig. It's a minig. I once had a balabas. I saw park a block away from my shul on Shabbos and walked the last block. So during the week, I went over to him. I said, you probably think there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos, so parking a block away and walking, you fulfill the mitzvah of walking on Shabbos. But there's an issue of driving on Shabbos, so parking a block away doesn't help. He said, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. My father parked in that place. My grandfather parked. It's a minig in our family. Okay, go fight with Minhagim. So it's only a minig. We didn't have that minig in our family, right? Murder, that's only a minig. We didn't have that minig in our family, not to murder. Right? So you've reduced the mitzvah to a minig, a chumrah, a shita. Nope, that helps until somebody brings you a Mishnah Berurah and a Kafachayim and Rabbi Eider in English. It's not a minig. Everybody holds that taking out bones with a bone plucker is a Torah prohibition. It's not a minig, it's not a chumrah, it's not just one opinion. Everybody, Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, Taimanim, everybody hold the same way. Now I'm stuck. So now I have to go down to level number seven. That's called Kofar Be'ikr. I deny God. What does that mean? Not that I deny God. I say the following. Okay, it's a mitzvah, you got me. But I can't do everything. I have a life to lead. You know, there's a limit. I can't do everything. So it's a mitzvah, okay. This is what I can't do. That means that the mitzvah is not an ikr in my life. I let God interfere in my life to a point, but you know, there's a limit. So if the mitzvah is not an ikr, then the mitzvah, the one who gave the mitzvah, is not an ikr in my life either. So God is part, but not, he's not the ikr of my life, and there's more important things in life than doing mitzvahs and listening to God. That's called kofar be'ikr. And you have to be on one of these levels if you don't want to improve, because otherwise you'll feel guilty, and human nature is not to want to feel guilty. You need one of these at some point, all the seven, and any one of them. And it applies to everybody. It applies to a person could be a 99% Haredi Jew, but in that one area they don't want to improve. For some people it's Shabbos, for some people it's Kashrus. We ate these things last year, I'm going to eat them now, I don't want to know anything new. Or it could be modesty. This is the way I dressed last year, I don't want to know anything about dressing differently or whatever. Or for some people it's business ethics. I cheated people last week, I'm going to cheat them this week, and I don't want to know about anything. Right? Anyway, it's probably mutter anyway, because you're allowed to cheat Goyim, and irreligious Jews are like Goyim, and most religious Jews are a bunch of fakers, so they're also Goyim. So everybody's no good. And you could cheat them all. Right? Which is not true, but I'm saying people convince themselves that it's okay, just like plucking the bones is okay. Just as long as you don't learn, and you don't know too much, you can fool yourself into thinking. And you can be 99% a person who's constantly improving, and in that one area you don't want to improve, where you stand still, you're going to have to be on one of these seven levels. Because otherwise you're going to feel guilty. And human nature is not to want to feel guilty. So therefore, that's what it says. Ashlosha dvarim ha'olam omid. Human nature is that in these three things, people aren't interested in progressing. They want to stand still. But if you stand still, Rashi says, you're going to end up standing still on the down escalator and ending up seven floors down in the bargain basement of Kofar Be'ikr. Okay, we'll continue next time.